You're listening to the leader in Marketing Plus technology. This is Sundog, the podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sundog the Podcast. It's the show where we talk about everything related to marketing plus technology. And I think we've exceeded the fire code for this show. We have got so many people in this room and one on the phone. So we'll see how this show goes today. We're going to be talking about design. And so we're going to introduce our panel. We're going to start off with our director of design and our senior creative strategist, Mr. Eric Fish Ista. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Hello, Lon.
How are you doing?
Thanks for having us.
You are so welcome. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm doing well.
Oh, okay.
That's all I got to say.
All right. Very good. We're going to go around the horn here and we'll introduce everyone that's on the microphone today. We're going to start on my left. He is our design intern. Matt Holt joins us on the show.
Howdy.
Howdy. Sitting next to Matt, another one of our designers, Jenna LaPlante.
Hi.
How are you?
First podcast.
Exciting. Welcome to the show. Don't worry, it's not live. You don't have to worry about that. And we will edit if we have to, if I feel like it.
You might have to with us designers.
Okay.
keep your F-bombs in.
There you go. That person was Crystal Ockery. As she's turning red. You gotta describe things. This is like theater of the mind. You gotta kind of paint the picture here.
Theater of the mind.
Crystal is also one of our designers. Next to Crystal is Katie Shallow.
Hi.
How are you doing, Katie?
Good.
Welcome to the show. And finally, rounding out the first-time podcast virgins on our show is Amy Cruz from our Minneapolis office. How are you doing, Amy?
Yes. Hello. Good afternoon.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, like I said, we're going to be talking about design, and I'm going to have the show start off with our director of design, Eric.
More specifically, I'd like to talk about design thinking and, you know, not just design in general, but the thought process behind it and how we use the tools that we do to come up with the things we create. You know, design is everywhere. I mean, you look around this room, everything in here is designed in some way, form, or fashion, from the lava lamp to the can of Dr. Pepper in front of me to the cheap Bic pencil. And so all of that was done with specific goals in mind and with a purpose. And that's what we talk about when we talk about design thinking, who are you doing this for and what is that purpose?
Along the same lines of the design thinking topic, Jenna, what do you think of when you're talking about design thinking? What does it mean to you?
Well, we don't just make things pretty. That's number one. I mean, you have to think about the problem that you're trying to solve, and a lot of it has to do with flow and how it's going to work for the person or the consumers looking at what you're doing with. And, you know, in the end result, it's not always about great color and how great it sometimes looks. It's about how easy you can understand the information or how great the information is shown to you.
Well, actually, you know, what we could do too is kind of start off by defining what it is. I mean, if you look for it on Google, there's sort of a standard textbook definition of design thinking. And maybe we can, let's go through that and get your guys' thoughts on what that really means to you as designers. Because I think the interesting thing about, you know, we actually hear a lot about design thinking now. It's becoming more and more prevalent in businesses, even places that don't necessarily have designers like in the traditional sense that we would be. It's a different way of approaching problems. And it kind of goes by different words too, like user experience, things like that, where you're actually thinking of the person that's going to be utilizing whatever you're doing at the end of it. So more of the standard definition, we have kind of five steps in the process here. One being empathize. Developing a deep understanding of what the challenge is, figuring out who you're doing that for. So really defining who that audience is and empathizing with their needs. Next step, define. We want to articulate what the problem is that we want to solve for these people. So now we know who they are and what they actually need. From there, I think, is the part that most people associate with the idea of design is that ideate stage where we start brainstorming, talking about solutions, maybe even jumping into some level of development of that solution too. And I think that's kind of where a lot of companies trip up, is that they immediately start with that ideate part and skip that those first two sections. Once you've gotten through that brainstorm, this is where we sort of unleash our talents again and start to prototype. So, can talk a little bit more about this, but what prototyping means to you guys. But, designing out, just getting a starting point, putting some of those thoughts together, see if they're working, test them out, part of them, all of them, whatever, see if it's coming together, grabbing other people, having them take a look at it. And then finally getting it out kind of into the real world and testing it and seeing, did you actually achieve what that goal was from the beginning with the people that you're empathizing with and the problem that you're solving for them? Did it actually function in that way? So, let's maybe based on those five, you guys, I think this is stuff that as designers, we do this every day. I mean, this is kind of how our minds function. And that's not to say that others out there don't think like that either. But I think there's compelling reasons that people should do it a bit more purposefully and sort of break down problems that they have like this. So, just starting off with empathize, when you guys start to get into a project, what do you, how do you do that? How do you go about figuring out who you're doing this for?
You have to figure out their pain points. So you figure out your audience and what they're trying to solve for. Is it X, Y, and Z, but they totally forgot about W? Like, you need to go back and figure out and get the whole spectrum of the problem and get different perspectives, whether it's the big CEO, the little guy in the corner, or the school teacher, whoever this, level of life this person may be. You have to figure out what the issue is to be able to even solve for it. So start from the way bottom and work your way up.
Yeah, I think a lot of clients maybe don't think about the big picture as much, and that's kind of our job to break it down for them. So if they're hung up on, we need a new website, you have to go back and think about, okay, what do you need a new website for? Who are you trying to communicate to? Do you need to reevaluate your branding? Do you need to put together a better content
model?
Yeah, content for your website. Is it more user experience that you need to work on? I think our job is kind of to figure out those pain points for them.
So you're saying kind of back things up a little bit.
Them, yeah.
Yeah. So instead of jumping right into that solution part of it, let's break it down and say, is this legitimately the problem that you're facing, or is it deeper than that?
Exactly.
How about you, Kenny? What kind of research? How do you get into the heads of the people that we're designing for?
Good question. Kind of everything that's been mentioned, I guess. But yeah, also taking a look at other examples and maybe seeing what has already been done and how that has worked out already and what can be improved on. And then, taking what they think the problem is and getting into whether that really is the problem or not, or if there's something underlying that's even a deeper issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's an interesting thing, the way I think designers tend to do research. Tell me if you guys do it differently. And Amy, maybe I'll throw this at you right away here, because I know Amy came in and worked on, right from the start, one of our biggest clients, and she had to get in pretty deep. They have a lot of things that they offer, and she needed some pretty deep understanding of it. When you do your research and go for inspiration and try to get into the heads of those users, do you tend to stay within the bounds of maybe what industry they're in, or do you break out? Where do you find those bits of research, Amy?
Definitely you look within their vertical, so to speak. And so you look within their industry, but it's very helpful to look outside the industry and see how you could apply different approaches to that same problem. Try to hone in on one problem and look around and find other solutions in very different places, and they will probably apply to your problem.
Where's the strangest place you've ever found inspiration?
Keep it PG.
probably something just completely unrelated, like in a football game, and maybe someone's approach to, you know, the form or their plan and the way they're working through their plan, even in a simple football game. It's like, oh, okay, so they started a little bit broader, or they started in a very specific area, or more in the abstract, that you can draw your conclusions to get something.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So Matthew, as our intern, you were brought in and thrown on our internal Sundog intern site. And, you know, you had to put together items from previous intern years, and we asked you to empathize with an intern. So you being an intern, and, you know, some might think that might be a little bit easier to sort of empathize with that audience. Did you find that was the case? Did you have any trouble doing that, thinking about future interns, or how'd you go about that process?
I think it was kind of both easy and hard at the same part, is I had been applying for internships, so I knew the process of how people go about it. But since we offer a variety of internships at Sundog, you have to step back and maybe not just target designers or developers. You also need to be able to target those other people that you might not be a part of. And so you have to step back. You need to walk in that journey, but you also can need to walk through everybody's pain points. Mm-hmm. So what exactly is a project manager intern or a social media intern going to be looking for, not just a developer or a designer? So being able to see the wide spectrum, what I like to do to find those pain points is trying to walk through the process that somebody might be going through to find those pain points. I like to try and put myself in their shoes with the empathizing, is I like to try and do that experience myself. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants, they present a problem, well, I'm going to see, like, if they're trying to welcome people better at a organization, I've visited similar organizations to see how I'm treated there, to see if I can better improve the experience that they're trying to give. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing I like to do, is I try to actually follow the process. It might take a little bit more time, but that's something I enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm. Great. So through that empathize process, then it was a nice segue into defining. You know, do you guys find that you sort of do the same thing? I mean, even if you're not that specific audience, can you put yourselves in the minds of those people and sort of think through what those problems can be?
We have a few healthcare clients, and I've worked on healthcare projects before. Everybody here is a patient when it comes to healthcare, but I am fortunate enough to have a husband who works in healthcare management. And so I get that view, and just, you have those people in your lives that for sure have that touch point in different varieties. I'm the creative, go free, wild thinker. My husband's the very strategic, take your time. And I can relate to him, or a parent or a child or somebody. You have that person in your life that has that touch point and that different personality trait that you can put your head into. And that's then you figure out their journey or their path and what they need out of a solution. So everybody has that person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it depends on what the project is or who the client is. If it's something that I don't understand, I have to do a lot more research for it first, or like Jenna said, rely on other people that I know.
Mm-hmm. I think even social media has become a great place to find out where people's pain points are. You can see what they're complaining about and why they're complaining about it. And you can use that, okay, this is their problems, and how can I go about solving these problems? Mm-hmm. So while you might not be directly related to that person in your network, you can definitely see what their pain points are and how you can address them in a better way than they're being addressed currently. And so that's one thing that I've tried to take a little bit of notice of, seeing, okay, this person struggles with finding different car parts. How can we best suit their needs? Part of my application at Sundog was doing a research or doing an ad campaign on a belt, car belts, which I'm not a mechanic in any sense, and I had no clue what these kind of belts were. So I was kind of looking on Facebook for some people, and one of my good friends, her dad's actually a mechanic, so I called him up and was like, okay, what are these? How do these work? What do you like or not like about this product? And then I kind of like ran some ideas by him of, is this something that would catch your eye? Is it not? Is this something you would like? And so just being able to have those resources, even though people aren't necessarily resources, but just being able to ask some questions and kind of pulling their mind.
Mm-hmm. I think finding the target audience and trying to reach out to like who the customer is and asking them like their opinion on what are they missing now and what would make their job easier. I think those are huge starting points that you have to get to before you can really start designing. Mm-hmm. So like for instance, we were designing a new website and we kind of figured out that one of the main issues that they were having is that they needed to get information by calling the company. And a lot of these guys, it would be like contractors and stuff. So they're not going to do a lot of Googling and stuff on a desktop computer. It definitely needs to be a mobile thing that's really easy for them to do on the go. And having the phone number like come up right away and be the most accessible thing was really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that brings up a good point of that other part of Define is not just knowing the problems that they have, but also where are these people? What are they doing on a daily basis? How are they accessing whatever we're creating? And so that's, yeah, definitely something to consider too, which brings us nicely to ideate. So this idea of you know, talking about now people are, you guys don't just come up with the ideas out of the blue, out of your head. You're actually communicating with people and talking to those that might have some sort of insight on something you might not. Very novel idea, by the way. So when you move into brainstorm mode, I know a number of us, we brainstorm together. We brainstorm with different areas in the company. What do you find, I guess, you know, sometimes brainstorming can be kind of rough if not everybody in the room is really agreeing on what's the direction things are going, or maybe a comment is made and you know in your heart that it's just not quite right. How do you guys deal with that? How do you deal with conflict in brainstorms and making sure that whatever is being discussed, right or wrong, in your own mind is actually, helping those people in the beginning that you talked about?
I think one part about brainstorming is you don't want to necessarily cut any idea off. It might start out bad, but the way it might grow might end up in a positive light, or it might be the best solution out there. So I think a part of that is you might not want to discuss it, or it might be heading in a wrong way. So maybe let it sit and ruminate for a bit and come back to it, or even just kind of redirect the conversation to something that might be a better fit for the client.
Let the rest of you go here in just a second, but I think I want to touch on that point though really quick. That idea of letting it sit and settle for a while. I think if anybody can learn anything from a designer, we often get blamed for procrastination, or it's like, oh, they need time to think about it. Well, it's true. I think, you know, so many people that aren't in the line of work that we are in want to get the idea, get it out there as fast as humanly possible. And I think that is like one of the biggest things that people could learn from us is that idea of let it incubate for a little bit. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, there's no bad idea when you're brainstorming. Put it all out there. Your knowledge of something might feed off than an experience I've had there, you know. You can think that way, but you're wrong is never anything you should ever say to anybody in a brainstorm meeting. I love thinking off what Crystal's experiences are, or Katie's experience, and Matthew. I mean, we all have different life experiences that then make us think about that one point. And from there, I mean, if somebody does have a bad answer and or a bad response, you just slide it under the table and you don't expand on it. Big deal. So for brainstorming, just go with the flow.
With brainstorming and then presenting your ideas, a lot of times I think it helps to have present the reason as well, because it's not always just, oh, this looked good and that's why I did it. But I think it's not always a conscious decision or a conscious thing we're thinking about as we're designing. Like we're not thinking about the reasoning necessarily all the time, but if you go back and then think
give
about
it a backbone,
then think about why you made the decision. There's usually some. Subconscious reasoning, or, you know, sometimes there is, you did go through the reasoning first of all, but I think it helps to have that and to give the client that reason to support the decisions you're making beyond just making it look good.
I think that kind of becomes the whole idea of design thinking, like, all along, because you're going back and forth. You're throwing all the ideas out on the table and trying out a lot of different things. But in the end, it makes you question every single part of your design and whether or not it's doing its intended purpose. And so you're not just making something look pretty. Like, you're picking your colors specifically. You're picking your typefaces specifically. You're adding details, or your user experience is very exact because you have gone through all the steps and added in all the feedback from everyone, other designers and your clients and everything, so that it becomes a whole package at the end and it's not just something you threw together.
Mm-hmm. It's done purposefully. You've made those decisions with an end result in mind, right?
Fish, how many times have you had to talk some client out of a interesting brainstorming idea that they've had?
You know, I don't know. I don't like to have to talk people out of things. You know, I think no matter what is said during a session, there's usually some legitimacy to it. So there's a seed of thought there, and it's sometimes it kind of goes back to like what Crystal said about, we have a problem. Nobody comes to our website. We need a new website. Okay. Well, if you keep backing up, you might find that the website's fine. It's that your branding isn't good, or nobody understands what your logo means or even knows you exist for that matter. You need more marketing. So if the idea was there, they knew that there was an issue, but just maybe hadn't gone into it enough. So what I like to try to do is find that thread within there. So if there is an idea that comes out, it's like, whoa, let's hold on that for a minute. Let's pick that apart a little bit. Why did you say that? Where is this coming from? And I find that if you start asking some of those questions, then you can start to reveal what they're trying to get at, and then piggyback off of that and start to build. So it's like you kind of clean the crud. It's like scraping barnacles off a boat, and then now we can paint it. If that makes sense. I don't know. But how about you, Amy?
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello, caller. You're on with Fish and Chips in the Morning.
Yes. I buzzed out a little bit there for a few minutes. Yeah.
She was design thinking.
She was design thinking. She was letting things incubate in her mind. No,
that's right.
Sorry,
that's
we did kind of go off on a tangent there. So in terms of brainstorming, you know, what techniques, what do you find to be effective when you are in a room full of people that might have different points of view? Say you're working with people in the technology area, maybe, more the linear thinking type, black and white thinkers versus kind of our scatterbrained approach.
Yeah. And one thing too, when we do brainstorm, is to keep in mind the actual source. Because a lot of times we work with our clients, and our clients are still maybe one removed from the actual source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're saying making sure that you're always circling back to that those people that you were empathizing with in the first step, right?
Exactly, yes, mm-hmm. Even though they might not be your client per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and actually to address Jenna's question, you know, about how do you talk somebody out of a bad idea, again, it might not necessarily, I don't like to classify things as bad ideas, but it might not be an idea that is effective for that audience. We often tend to make things personal for ourselves. And so sometimes a reminder of that, it's not what you think. It's not what I think. It's what that client or that customer thinks. So, well, once we've gotten through the brainstorm piece of it and we start to prototype, that's, you know, we all kind of go off in our own directions, and I think prototyping, we could consider that initial designing. Working with UX, working with the developers, getting an understanding of what we're doing to kind of move this final piece forward. How do you guys take those concepts, those kind of up in the air smoke ideas that came out of that session, and really start to make them solid?
pretty much during any brainstorming session, there's visuals that are they're popping in the head as you're talking about all this stuff. And you already have it kind of set in your head what this emotional connection or this look or feel is going to look like in your head. And then once you start talking to some other departments, you talk about the creative writing or the tech team or, you know, with our UX designers, what in their minds are they thinking? There's a great way to then mesh it all together. So there's, as far as concept and look and feel, it's there during brainstorming, and that's where you start rolling. And I love when, you know, if a couple designers are working on a project at a time, we quickly get it on paper, do multiple check-ins with each other because, ooh, that button you made there, that's great. I'm going to play off that look and feel and incorporate it into my design. So it's so wonderful being able to feed off of each other, and that's why it's so great having a larger design department to work with.
Yeah, collaboration is really key, I think, at seeing what each other's doing and inspiring each other. Were you going to say something, Amy?
Yeah, it kind of starts with the sketching and in the brainstorming. You know, the pen and paper, just little circles and squares and stuff, and then as those squares, they develop more on your mind, you develop them more on with the computer.
Yeah, I find, too, starting rough and just being able to flow with the ideas, just kind of getting them out there before they've become too solid and much easier to throw away a scratchy piece of paper than it is to delete a big file and feel like, I've been working on this for hours.
I'm totally the opposite. I don't really like to... I don't really do the pen and paper.
You're doing it wrong. Kidding.
But I feel like when I start designing, like, yeah, I have an idea, but it really comes together more organically. And I am definitely I have better collaboration when I start that way, like, because I'll get to a certain point and maybe have a question or not quite know if something looks right. So I'll pass it around and, you know, what do you think of this? Do you think that it's maybe not the right color or whatever, not the right shape or something? Or what else does this need? Because then I think when I get that input from other designers and even like potential customers, it helps me a lot as far as like I'm maybe not seeing it the same way as they do. So I was designing a logo for a radio station, and I just kind of passed that around to like anybody that could be a potential listener, just to see if they thought that it was, you know, coming along or or not. I guess that's like my form of like asking questions and making suggestions.
Sure.
I think for me, there's sometimes a little bit of trial and error too. I mean, like Jenna said, I always have some sort of idea right away and try to put that down right away and get started. But then if something's not working, I'll try to, you know, it doesn't mean the whole thing isn't working. It just means that there's something about it that isn't quite there. So, you know, taking the thing that's not working and, but using the aspects that are and moving forward and kind of branching off and hopefully ending up in a better direction.
Sometimes it just clicks, doesn't it? And you can just fly and there's something on paper within an hour, and other times it drags on and you really need your your fellow comrades to help you out. But you know, it's definitely, there's no estimate on getting that concept out on first time.
Most of my ideas come in the shower or while I'm driving.
Do you have one of those soap pencils in your shower?
I don't, but I should.
You should. Yeah. Driving, you shouldn't do that though. No.
I feel like that kind of becomes a difficult thing for all of us, is like estimating time. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like how can you put a time on how long it's going to take me to come up with the best idea? You know, like it's almost impossible.
It is. And like I was just saying, it to me, it usually comes when I'm not thinking about it. Like, don't force it. I think, you know, it's kind of like that incubation sort of period too. You know, it's you walk away from it for a while and, you know, things will start to click a little better.
Design drunk, edit sober.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
You might
have
to edit that one out. That's usually how it goes.
I like it. So this idea of prototyping, I think, again, We have our way of doing it. It's, you know, if it's in sketch form, if it's on the computer, whatever. But what I'm hearing everybody say too is that you're continually going back to that original group and making sure that what you're creating is meant for them. This is another part that I think, you know, other areas of business throughout the world could learn from designers as they start to incorporate this idea of design thinking into their companies is, you know, what does prototype really mean? I've seen so many people get stuck on the first idea. And I don't remember where I heard it, but a really good piece of advice I once heard is never go with your first idea. Now, I've added to that a little bit where it's even if your fifth idea is to go back to your first idea, that's okay.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's usually first works.
So, but I've done, you know, it's like I do something, it's like, well, that's okay. And then I kind of explore a few different directions. And then I realize, no, I had to do that. I had to do that exploration in order to validate that first idea and make sure that that was indeed the direction to go. So, but yeah, I think that idea of prototyping, companies really need to embrace that no matter what they're doing. If it's, you know, take this out of our design, graphic design world and put it into more of a business world. Try things out with putting people in different places. Try, you know, utilizing their skills in different ways. Does it work? Test it out. So that, you know, that brings us to the next section of test, which I think for us usually is getting it out there. It's a finished piece. It's out the door. It's easier for us to do now in the digital world where we can change things more rapidly, more so than, you know, print in the past where it's like, oh, that's not working. I got a lot of brochures left over. You know, I think it's very valuable that we have that digital edge now for companies to test out their messaging, graphics, whatever it happens to be. They can see how they're working, and does that indeed tie back to that step number one where the empathy comes into play. So now, talking about all of this stuff, you know, we've all, like you said, these are the tools that we use pretty much every day. Do you guys, are there any really good examples that you've seen out there where you think, wow, this company really did this? They thought about it. They made sure they understood who they were talking to and where they were, what they were doing, came up with some great ideas. And maybe I've even seen some tests that they've done. I've seen things evolve. And then they just keep getting better, you know, and it can be, I'm not talking just graphic design, anything. Is it, you know, any manufacturing, is it any sort of, you know, personal experience too? Really, I mean, this could apply to any type of business or service. Wow, no good experiences.
I think on the media side of things, one commercial that I think is really enjoyable is the Ziploc. I think it's like the Saran Wrap stuff. And a dad's left home babysitting. And he uses it for, like, I think the kids' food. And he's like, this works great. I'm going to use it for everything. And it's just really funny to see how one positive user experience changed his entire babysitting routine. So the mom comes home, like, a couple hours later and is expecting the house to be torn apart. Everything is covered in this Ziploc. And he's like, oh, you guys are back already? Oh, I got everything under control.
This stuff is easy. I don't know what you're complaining about. Kind of scenario.
And it's just really funny because they want to sell it, but they're going towards the dad saying, oh, get this, it's cool, you can do all these fun things, babysitting is going to be a breeze. And on the other side of things, that the wives or the moms buying it, well, okay, this will make stuff easier on my husband and I'll come home to a clean house. It's not just one thing. You want to get more results from one like start product. It's kind of diversifying and being creative, using your thinking to target more than one audience. Mm-hmm. And that way you can have a bigger impact and use maybe the limited resource. I think they just used a house and like four people, including a baby. And so they didn't have that big of a resource, but they targeted a really, really funny. So you get the humor, you get the advertisement, you get this wide variety of things from just one small little tidbit.
Cool. I haven't seen that. I'll have to check that one out.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a genius with the Saran Wrap. He puts the keys on the wall with the Saran Wrap. He makes a sippy cup out of it. It's good stuff.
The TV remote to the couch.
Yeah.
I think that was a great idea too.
Nice.
Or the jewelry drawer too. I don't think my mom would appreciate it.
the standard example that I think most people think of is Apple. How, you know,
if you think, come on.
Well, no, but I'm just going to kind of walk, you know, with the iPod specifically, where it was nobody knew they wanted an iPod until iPods existed.
That's true.
And so what was the empathy there? It was knowing that people want to listen to music on the go and they don't want to have to carry all of this stuff. They want all of their music. And, you know, how do they define that? And then going through the ideation stage of that, I'm sure was huge. And, you know, the prototyping. So if you think of prototyping and testing being every generation that's come out since then and how that's been refined each time and taking the feedback and how people are using it and what else do they want on there. I'd say one bad direction on that, which I don't know that they went through the empathy stage, is iTunes. I absolutely hate iTunes now. It's a pile of garbage and I cannot figure out my way around it. It went from a simple, I don't know how anybody can screw up a list so bad. It's just, it's a list of music. I should be able to find and listen to what I want on there, but I can't. And it drives me absolutely insane. And I have so much music in there and it just makes me just furious. And
someone just tell me where the play button is.
Yeah, exactly. And I search and it like brings up like everything that band has ever done. Nope, I am in iTunes. I can Google that if I want. I don't have to do it in iTunes. And so that to me is like just completely counter of, you know, they've gone through many iterations of iTunes. And so I see prototyping, I see testing. The hardware gets better, but the software is like going in the opposite direction. So how do you, you know, somebody needs to counter that.
I think one of my favorite design examples that works for the audience is Menards. There is a company where it's not pretty, but holy cow, does it get its audience knowing what's going on. Their ads are simple and clean to read. It's definitely not glamorous or gorgeous looking, but for the audience that it is, it's clear messaging and what it is, and it's easy to get what you want, but it's so not pretty, but it works.
They know their audience they stay true to that audience.
Yes, it's Menards, cheap, get your stuff, get out, go home, sweat your butt off, done those home projects.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm that audience.
Yeah, that's me too.
I've been thinking about getting a part-time job at Menards just so I could like hang out there more often.
Do they have a discount? Because I'll join you then.
I'm guessing they do.
Have any of you guys heard of Chubbies? It's a shorts brand, and they're another one that knows their audience. They're targeted towards bros.
And they empathizing with the bro audience.
Pretty much. They have a brilliant copy, so it's like everything is like it's written for a bro or a bro talking to another bro. And like their emails, they're full of gifts and just ridiculousness, and it's just... I'm probably not going to buy them, but they're just fun to receive the emails to kind of see what craziness they've been up to this week, whether it's just seeing what their audience has been submitting or all the wacky gifts that they've been compiling. They know who their target audience is, and they know how to reach them, and it's just really fun to see how well they do that.
Hmm. That's another one I haven't heard of. I got to check that out, too.
That made me think of Duluth Trading Company.
Ah, yes.
I love their advertising. And then, like, I feel like they went through the lengths of, like targeting what their, what the problems that they needed to fix with some of their clothing. So, like, they make longer T-shirts and, you know, and then,
for
like,
dudes
they,
with tummies.
Right, and they, like, make it really funny. And they have, like, sweat wicking thermals with a little patch of eyeglass wiper fabric on them. And I just think they're great because they not only like fixed the problem with the actual product and made it look good, but then they also like advertised to that and in a really witty, funny way. Mm-hmm. So their advertising is like, no more butt cracks, you know? And it's like, this is great. But sometimes I just keep their catalog around because they make me laugh.
I'm going back to Apple, sorry. But not the actual products, but their stores, which I just wrote a blog post that includes some information on this. But they took the experience of shopping and, you know, every store you go in, you have to wait in line and check out with the cashier, the cash register. And, you know, that's I think that's always just been kind of, that's the way you do it. And Apple was like, no, we can make this better. And they actually are able to use their own products by using an iPhone to check you out on the floor with the salespeople. And then now, I don't know, I think this is just more recent, but now you can even check out without one of the salespeople on your own. You can go through your Apple Pay and all of that. And yeah, they just kind of...
Self-serve.
Yeah.
Okay, so that actually brings up a question. Each of you, I want to answer. Self-checkout lines at grocery stores?
No.
Terrible. From user what, experience and working them.
What design thinking went into that?
The guy who just needed a roll of toilet paper. But when you're buying like your produce or like the apples, to find the code on the side, I can't do it. I can't figure it out.
It actually made me empathize more with the checkers that work there.
Yes, it does. True.
But I don't know. Crystal, yay or nay?
I love self-checkouts.
Do you?
I love them.
You and my wife.
Because I always get the cashier that's like, what is this? It's freaking cilantro. Like, what? I actually had one time that it was asparagus. And he's like, what is this? And he was like 50 years old, too.
Eat a vegetable, man.
And I was like, what? How do you not know what asparagus is? And then he's like, how do you spell that? Just about like left my stuff there because I was just like infuriated at the situation because it was, yeah, exactly. And it was, you know, rush hour and it was so busy in there and I'm an anxious person already. And so I was just like, oh my gosh, how can this be happening right now?
I used to work at a grocery store too, and they were the most annoying things to watch because you're just standing there for hours and then somebody has a problem and everybody has a problem at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's in the bag. The item is in the bag. Yeah. Check least, it out.
Like, please place item in the bag.
It's in the bag.
Cannot ring up item until you place previous item in the bag.
Or even another thing is like you have to hit the pay electronically, which the cashier usually does that. So customers aren't expecting to do that.
Oh, no.
But Walmart I'm not sure what they trademarked it or something, where it doesn't automatically go to electronic payment unless you press a button anywhere other than Walmart.
No.
And so everybody's just standing there like, okay, what's taking forever? And then everybody, the line backs up, and then the cashier's like, you just have to press this button. They're like, oh, okay, after waiting like 15 minutes. And like even as a cashier going through, sometimes I forget about that too. So I'm just like, what the heck is taking so long? I've been here like 10 minutes. Card does not take that long to process. And I'm like, oh, I forgot to press the button. And it's just little things like that, that there's so many little things that adds
the
up.
The details, yeah.
And it just becomes this annoying product, okay. A beast.
Okay, wait, Katie, yay or nay?
Yeah.
Self-check?
Well, I guess I like them. But
so
now that it's
two against two. Amy, you're the deciding vote.
It's the young single gals. Amy?
Yes, I am. If I'm shopping by myself, it's a definite yay because you just need to know a few key things on the products you buy, know a few key produce codes, punch them in, you're done, you're in, you're out. If you have kids with you, they like to hang out on those scales. And that just picks me up. Like, removed your item from the scale. Oh my god, get off the scale, get off.
Does it give you suggestions like you're buying a 20-pound turkey or something like that? One item at a time, please.
They go back to sitting on the scale. I'm like, get off the scale.
That gave me a really funny idea. Like, if you have the self-checkout, like, an improvement, or maybe it would be annoying to some people, but would be, like, what they do with websites. Like, we recommend this for you. You know what I mean? Like,
side advertisement? Like, I'm going to get out of the checkout line to go get that? Come on, Crystal.
I know. No. But, like, I mean, it wouldn't have to be at the checkout, but if it was something even at the store, like, I don't know, even paper signage.
So, say you're buying like a laxative or something, and it recommends some roughage or fiber. Maybe next time, other people bought this.
Yeah. I feel like that's like the supermarket of the future, though.
I think you're right. So this is some design thinking in action right here, actually. So now we are now empathizing with somebody that has a less than pleasant digestive system, right? Now,
Amazon Live is what this is.
You think you're right. No, I mean, honestly, that's exactly what this is. So we're talking, you know, who is this? These are people that have irritable bowel syndrome. They have upset tummies. What's the problem? So what is their problem? Maybe they're not getting enough fiber. So, you know, so you can go from there. How do we get more fiber to these people? And then the ideation process starts. So.
Oh man, I'm just getting more ideas now.
See, isn't this a wonderful thing?
Like with the Target Cartwheel app, It's amazing. But like, wouldn't it be sweet if you added like one thing to your app? Like, yeah, okay, clearance shoes, and then it says, how about socks? You know,
there you go.
And like, it pops up on your phone, so it's like a little notification. Okay, I'll stop.
I gotta say one thing that I did notice the last time I used a self-checkout was they have started incorporating, like, these are popular items, so you don't have to look for the bananas or the grapes.
Yeah,
or
that's
like,
totally.
And then it's like the stuff that's on sale, too, so it's like, oh, I just have to click the button. I don't have to hit anything. It's just right there already, which that's a small improvement. They still have a long way to go, in my opinion, but at least they're moving in the right direction. Yep.
I agree.
At the risk of getting stoned, I'm going to go back to Apple one more time. So I want to go back, Fish, when you talked about iTunes. And yes. I mean, they totally wrecked it. Everyone in the room agrees. So
it's a Greek tragedy.
I mean, what do you think happened? I mean, they had a good design and it just went south. Is it a case of like design overthinking, or is it, you know, we got to change it just for the sake of changing it?
I'll tell you what they did. It's they went feature on it. So that is, if you look back at any sort of phone, the ones that have been most successful are the ones that are more, the less, it's less is more is what's going on. I think personally, why I don't like the way it functions. It's Apple. They Microsoft it, kind of, you know, I mean, it's, when you look at how a lot of those functionalities were, it's just so much. It's like, oh, you can do this and you can do this and you can do this and you can do this. How many people are actually doing those things versus, I just want to listen to my music. If I don't want to find a specific band, I'll just shuffle, you know? So, I think if you got back to that, just the most simple, approach possible, it would, take its life back.
Yeah. They overcomplicated it.
Like, currently, I feel like it's a combination of Spotify plus my library with the new iTunes Radio or whatever, Apple Radio. And so it's like, I just want to go to a single genre. I honestly don't know how to use it anymore. So I've just started using Spotify because I want to find my music, but I can't. So I might as well just go use Spotify, which is just one, instead of trying to merge the two ideas together. I feel like the newest iteration has done that the most, is they've taken away a lot of the original functionality, which they've built up their users, and they changed it so drastically that nobody knows how to use it anymore. And so I'm really hoping that they realize that there's been a lack of usage with this new variety, this new edition of it, and they reintroduce some of their old features, or just even the ability to take off some of those options.
Right.
I was trying to find it yesterday, and it's like, I can't even find out how to change the interface at all because you used to have that ability. And I was just frustrated. So I was like, okay, well, wish I could delete this off the iPhone, but nope.
I think that's definitely like a valid question that we always ask ourselves when within design thinking, is how to solve the problem but not alienate existing customers.
Yeah. You know, a huge part of this too, and I don't know, that usually comes during the prototype part of this, is editing ourselves. I think really good design, effective design, is achieved by making sure that you're editing out anything that isn't necessary. And I think the more you can cut out, the better it gets. It just streamlines things. There's not a overabundance of fluff, which, back to iTunes, I think that's what's happened. It's just got fluffy. Fluffy iTunes. I'll snuggle with it.
Well, when you think about like really good design, it not necessarily is minimal, like minimalist design, but it is very, like, the best designs that you can think of are usually pretty stripped down to the basics.
White space. Lots of white space. White space allows you to find things easier, gives you that time to breathe between content. You can read this in my next blog, why white space is important. But for the most part, if you even think about it, the really cheap packaging loads it with stuff, with color, with information, with text, with everything. And then if you look at an Apple packaging, it's just clean and simple and white mm-hmm. because it is the information. You already know what it is and you don't have to be sold on it.
Well, yeah, when everything on the page is important, nothing's important.
Exactly.
Like, oh, now that red color is fighting with the giant text. We got to make the giant text bigger. Well, now that's too big. We got to make the red redder.
Put a bird on it.
That simple packaging is just more than their design, though. That's a true representation of what that brand wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Clean and simple.
Yeah, and actually, I don't think we'll do it right now, but I do want to talk about packaging and design thinking maybe in the next session here. But that's definitely something that you see the more and more things become disposable and we have single serving everything. You know, the design thinking that goes into those pieces and who's doing it well and where are people really failing, because there's a lot of waste out there that could be eliminated, I think, with a little bit more thought process in there. But, well, any final thoughts here, guys? No?
Everyone can be a design thinker.
Yes, they can.
It's not just us crazy folk. Everyone can think.
All right. How about you, Amy? Anything from far, far away?
I was just thinking of a different example of people who use design thinking. People in the educational system, we went through a transition period of getting a new principal. And our old principal was a non-design thinker. She was, hey, this is the way we've always done things. We're going to keep it the way it goes, with the way it's been going. Our new principal is our design thinker and is always trying to tweak our system and always trying to make things a little bit better. So it's they're not designers, but they apply that kind of thinking. And the people who really kind of move things forward apply that kind of thinking. So it's not just design.
So it sounds like prototype and test, huh?
Yes.
That's education system. That's a really, really good example. There's, a lot that really do well at that and can empathize with the people involved and the children and whoever else, the other teachers. But there's definitely some old school thinkers that I don't want to change. Ding, dang it.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So you should go away. You know, that's just an example of beyond design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a great one. All right. Well, it's 1,000 degrees in here, so I think we should wrap this up. And thank you guys very much for all your thoughts. We'll probably be in here again soon. Thank you, Lon.
Thanks, Lon.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lon. This was the best show ever. I didn't have to do a thing.
Are you saying we're chatterboxes? Or
no, you go right ahead. You're like, or how long are we? Oh, this is only 57 minutes long. We're good.
Oh, whoops. Have fun editing.
We got part two. What? Packaging is, you said you want to do another one?
It'll be part three. I think we break this one into a
break
couple.
It. Bring it up. Okay, we can do that.
Environmental design.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Guerrilla campaigns. There's so much we could talk about.
I know.
All right, that's a teaser, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll be back for the next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.